There are some great existing tools out there, but to really get a complete solution to safely hold Bitcoin, you got to combine a lot of them. By the time you actually put together a full solution to keep Bitcoin safe long term, like, you've kind of designed your own wallet at some level by putting these things together, and you sort of have to trade off amongst safety, usability, and privacy. We believe that Bitcoin will be the native currency of the internet. We believe that its openness and its permissionlessness is what will make that true. That's what we're focused on, making Bitcoin everyday money.
Max, good to meet you, man. I'm excited for this show. You guys over at Block have just been shipping relentlessly for the last few months. You've was it just maybe 3-4 months ago you were launched Proto? Then Square have just announced that they're allowing Bitcoin payments to all the merchants in the US. BitKey have had a big security upgrade, which we're going to talk a bit about today, a big privacy upgrade, I should say. But I want to get into this in detail. But before we do, this is the first time you've been on the show. The listeners might not know exactly who you are. Do you want to start with just a bit of an introduction, who you are, what you do?
Sure. Yeah, and thanks for having me. Excited to be on. So I'm Max Guys. I'm leading BitKey and helping to develop Proto. And also just generally excited about all the things we're shipping at Block and can't wait to talk about more of them. I've been at Block since 2013 and helped work on, you know, early Square hardware, helped, you know, some of the development of Cash App when we launched Bitcoin buying and selling capability. And then in 2021, started leading and developing BitKey and now contributing to Proto as well.
That's awesome. So you were working at Square way before Bitcoin was like an integral part of that business. When did Bitcoin actually become like a something that you were focusing on there?
It's an interesting question because I think, honestly, from as long as I can remember at Block, the whole time, we've had an interest in Bitcoin. I think the fact that we started off disrupting the payments industry with, you know, making it possible for small sellers to never miss a sale, that came from frustration with the existing system, that came from hidden fees, that came from crazy Byzantine processes that people had to go through to sign up for merchant accounts. And that came from a desire to help enable people who were basically being left out of the financial system. And that's really what Square was born out of. And so I think we've attracted people and talent across the company that has been interested in it for a long time. And we also have a history of making bets early on that we think can be disruptive long term. And, you know, sometimes we're early with those. And so we actually did have some very, very early Bitcoin experiments where we were probably a little early. And I think where we really, really took off is when we introduced buying and selling of Bitcoin and Cash App. That was, you know, timed incredibly well with people's interest and also part of creating that interest. And so I think it helped put Bitcoin in front of a lot of people in 2018.
And inside Square or inside Block, maybe, who is it Jack driving all the Bitcoin stuff, or have you got a load of people internally that are also sort of very keen to push Bitcoin as far as possible?
Jack's been a visionary for this for sure. I think he got lots and lots more people interested in Bitcoin who maybe hadn't heard of it originally. And, you know, once they discovered it, started to understand, you know, how it can help. And so I think there's been a massive enablement from Jack at the company to sort of point the way. And then there are a ton of folks that have helped build all the things we're going to talk about. And I think, you know, some of those folks started off as Bitcoiners who came here specifically to build those features. And some of those were folks who are incredible electrical engineers, incredible software developers, and incredible marketing folks that started to learn more and more about, you know, what we could do with Bitcoin and you know, now we have sort of joined the ranks, so to speak.
And just in the last week or so, you've announced that all Square terminals in the US at the moment can now accept Bitcoin as payment. This is really cool because, like, everything previously has been Bitcoiners going into their local butcher or wherever and just nagging the owner to accept Bitcoin. And then when they finally do, like, they're the only person paying in Bitcoin. So they forget how to do it in between sales. Like, it's always been a very clunky experience. And you guys have just basically turned this on on their normal payment terminal, making it really easy. Like, do you want to explain what you've done there?
Yeah, this is huge. I'm really excited about this. And just a huge hat tip to Miles Suter and the whole team who's driven this. And I love seeing it go live. So we launched acceptance on Square. And so what that means is that Square merchants can accept Bitcoin. Now, they can actually receive it as Bitcoin or they can receive it as dollars. And I'll talk in a minute about why that's important. And, you know, we've also launched the ability in Cash App when paying with Bitcoin to fulfill that either by debiting your dollars balance or debiting your Bitcoin balance. And so what this means is when transactions happen at a Square merchant and with Cash App on the other side, basically any combination of sending dollars and receiving Bitcoin, sending Bitcoin, receiving dollars, all of those combinations can happen. And this is really interesting because it means that Square merchants can accept Bitcoin, but if it doesn't make sense for them or for their business to receive in Bitcoin right now, they don't have to. They can still accept, make the sale, and receive in dollars. And on the Cash App side, you know, if I'm paying at a merchant and I want to, you know, avoid a taxable event given the current status of you know, where I live and the laws, I can debit my dollar balance. And one of the things that's really interesting about this is that, you know, in the background, what we're really targeting here is 3% fees that everybody has accepted we need to pay on every transaction. And to small businesses, 3% is a lot more than it sounds like. So you might, you know, see a credit card fee, be annoyed by it, you know, but for most transactions, it might not matter that much. But when you look at the books for small businesses and the actual profit they're making, these are businesses that they have thin margins. Like they're really, and a lot of, especially right now, a lot of small businesses are actually really struggling. And so the fees that they don't have to pay because of transactions like this, that can be really, really meaningful. And so I think this is really exciting. I think it's a really big deal for small businesses. And, you know, you mentioned Bitcoiners nagging folks to take payment. We also added the Bitcoin map in Cash App, which makes that even more possible. And we're actually, if you follow Miles on Twitter, you can see we're paying bounties for folks who, you know, help Square sellers get started with this. So definitely check it out if you haven't already in Cash App. If you go to the Bitcoin tab, you can see a map and in the spend Bitcoin option, you can see a map of, you know, local Square merchants that are accepting Bitcoin and local merchants that are accepting Bitcoin, even if they're not using Square.
Do you know how many people are actually accepting Bitcoin as of sort of right now?
You know, I'm probably not the right person to ask about the stats, so I don't have anything to share right now. But I think one thing that I've found really inspiring is that there are an incredible number of videos of folks, you know, going around to businesses that are, you know, on the map and patronizing them and also, you know, and supporting their businesses and also folks who are, you know, have shared some videos of convincing merchants to turn it on because it's opt-in for right now. And I think it's really neat to see.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've seen Parker Lewis has been posting a load of videos around Austin, going to different places, buying with Bitcoin. And so on the like merchant side of that, how do they actually accept it? Does it work in the exact same way it would for just a fiat payment, or do they have to do something else? Like, do they have to actually select Bitcoin payment? Do you have to tell them you're paying in Bitcoin?
Today, you do need to tell them you're paying in Bitcoin, and they need to opt into doing that. We're starting small, but you should expect to see that expand.
Yeah, because if that got to the point where there was no noticeable difference in how like the UX of that flow worked and you could just pay in Bitcoin, the merchant doesn't even need to know you're paying in Bitcoin. That would be huge. With this, though, like obviously one of the challenges is the merchants understanding why they would want to accept Bitcoin. Like, is there a kind of an educational thing that goes along with this? Are you sending out like care packages of Bitcoin information to these people?
There's actually a page that I should point folks to. It's a bitcoinmerchantcommunity.org that talks about it. And you know, credit with Steve Lee, who leads Spiral here, I think is a great champion of highlighting when we need to speak in terms that aren't purely drawn from the Bitcoin community. So, you know, showing up in a merchant and talking only about Bitcoin without the why, or kind of putting things in the terms that that make sense to them in their business today, that can be a miss. And it's much stronger if we can explain why this is important and where this is going to take us. And really the central theme here is fees going to third parties that we rely on for most transactions. And when this is an open network and you can pay not even just with Cash App, you can pay with any Bitcoin wallet at Square terminals, like there aren't 3% fees. And, you know, this is really about that. And the openness of the network, I think, is going to support that and make this very, I think this will make it really widespread long term. And I think, you know, the path we're on, where we're headed, is all the signs we've seen in the past that are like there's a 3% surcharge for credit cards. I think this is going to turn into, you know, there's a 3% discount for paying with Bitcoin.
What if you could lower your tax bill and stack Bitcoin at the same time? Well, by mining Bitcoin with Blockware, you can. New tax guidelines from the Big Beautiful Bill allow American miners to write off 100% of the cost of their mining hardware in a single tax year. That's right, 100% write-off. So if you have $100,000 in capital gains or income, you can purchase $100,000 of miners and offset it entirely. Blockware's mining as a service enables you to start mining Bitcoin right now without lifting a finger. Blockware handles everything from securing the miners to sourcing low-cost power to configuring the pool. They do it all. You get to stack Bitcoin at a discount every single day while also saving big come tax season. Get started today by going to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/WBD. Of course, none of this is tax advice. Speak to your accountant or tax advisor to understand how these rules apply to you. And then head over to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/WBD and you'll get 1 week of free hosting and electricity with each hosted miner purchased. What Bitcoin Did is brought to you by the massive legends Iron, the largest NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin miner using 100% renewable energy. Iron are not just powering the Bitcoin network, they're also providing cutting-edge computing resources for AI, all backed by renewable energy. We've been working with their founders, Dan and Will, for quite some time now and have been really impressed with their values, especially their commitment to local communities and sustainable computing power. So whether you're interested in mining Bitcoin or harnessing AI compute power, Iron is setting the standard. Visit iron.com to learn more, which is iren.com. This episode is brought to you by River, and they've just launched a very cool new product where you can automatically buy every price dip. Their zero-fee recurring buys are a proven way to build wealth with Bitcoin, and you can now supercharge them and buy up to 100% more Bitcoin if the price is dipping at the time of your order. It's a great tool to buy more Bitcoin at lower prices, and while your cash is waiting to be deployed, you earn 3.75% interest on it paid in Bitcoin. River is built to last with security at its core and is the only Bitcoin exchange in the US with proof of reserves. To open an account, go to river.com/WBD and earn up to $100 in Bitcoin when you buy. That's river.com/WBD. I mean, I know you're focused on the BitKey stuff. I've sprung this on you because this is news since we sort of set this show up, and I really want to talk about it. It's something I'm very excited about. So last question on the Square stuff. Obviously, this is US only at the moment. I don't live in the US, although I spend a lot of time there. And when I do, I'll be searching out these places. But is this going to expand globally, or is it at the moment just focused on the US?
It's a good question. Bitcoin's an open global permissionless network. We started with the US. We have, you know, the strongest network there and you know, a large base of merchants, large base of Cash App users. So we're starting there. But you should expect to see us have intentions beyond that over time.
It's very exciting. I think it's one of the coolest things we've seen in a long time, because this has always just been a mess trying to get merchants to accept Bitcoin, trying to do the education. It's just like Bitcoiners going around to their local shops and doing it. Like having this from, like, I don't know how many people use Square, but an insane number of businesses, particularly small businesses, are using Square. Like having that just enabled on everyone's machine, like that's very cool. But we should talk a little bit about BitKey, because you guys have had a huge privacy upgrade there. Before we get into the details of that, do you want to just explain like where BitKey came from and like what it is trying to, you know, where it's trying to fit in the hardware wallet market?
Yeah. So we started BitKey. We wanted to make it safe and easy for people to truly own their Bitcoin. And you could probably guess based on, you know, me talking about an open network earlier, that what's driving that is that, you know, the strength of Bitcoin is that it's permissionless. Anyone can use it. And part of what's behind that is the decentralization of the network and the fact that, you know, we don't have centralized entities controlling it. And so, you know, if we ultimately have coins stored on, you know, a couple of exchanges worldwide, then that's not particularly permissionless in the end. And so we want to make it, you know, easy for people to safely own their coins and not to sit there with them on an exchange subject to hacks and mismanagement like we've seen with exchange collapses. And also just in charge of their Bitcoin instead of listening to somebody else about, you know, when they can move their money, who they can send it to, and how much they can send. And so that's why we built BitKey. And when we started this off, one of our observations was that, you know, there are some great existing tools out there, but to really get a complete solution to safely hold Bitcoin, you got to combine a lot of them. Quite a few of them are hard to use for most folks and like really capable tools, but things that are just, by the time you actually put together a full solution to keep Bitcoin safe long term, like you've kind of designed your own wallet at some level by putting these things together. And, you know, for some people, that's an awesome exercise. it is for me. That's literally what I do, every day. But not everybody is, wants to take on that odyssey. And so our intent with BitKey was to make it easy for folks. And historically, what that's meant is, you sort of have to trade off amongst safety, usability, and privacy. Mm-hmm. And so, in sort of the basic case or the most vanilla case, somebody might use a hardware wallet, single signature, they have one key, they have a seed phrase backup. And you probably heard my opinions many times on this, but that often leads to a situation that isn't as safe as people think it is. Things like storing a seed phrase improperly and having someone see it and be able to steal your funds, or in some cases, accidentally being tricked into, revealing part of the seed phrase and getting funds stolen, or having the seed phrase backup and the hardware wallet in the same place and suffering a house fire and being completely out of luck. These sorts of things, just for long-term safe storage of Bitcoin, like, they're a problem. And so, another alternative is people gluing these things together using something, doing a sort of DIY multi-sig. It turns out you can build something that's really safe and really private. It's just really hard. And it's really hard to maintain it and keep it in a safe state over time. And so what people have often gone to is something we'll refer to as collaborative custody services. And that's where you, ask a third party to help keep your Bitcoin safe, not by handing it over like a custodian where they have unilateral control and can move it without you, but where they're holding on to maybe one key or a backup or some combination of those, where they can help you when you start to lose things, but the default state is you can unilaterally exit at any time. So to me, that's part of the definition of self-custody, that you can unilaterally move your funds at any time. And collaborative custodians have historically been able to help you more safely store Bitcoin while retaining control. And the problem is exactly what you said, which is the trade-off in that case is privacy. When you give, that third key, for example, in BitKey's case prior to this upgrade, to a custodian, we had what's called a wallet descriptor, which meant that we could see, your balance and we could see your transactions on the blockchain. Like, we could pick out on the blockchain which activity is associated with that wallet. And that's true of every other collaborative custody service out there. And this is highly unfortunate because, as you and I both know, and I think as most of the Bitcoin community knows and values, like, we don't want that. We don't want people to know, which coins are ours. We don't want people to know how much we have. Like, there's a fundamental need for privacy that we want to be able to fulfill. And we found ourselves torn between, how do we get that if we have to trade off safety? And so the really interesting thing about this upgrade is we've figured out how to do both. So the BitKey product didn't change at all with this upgrade. It's the same rate recovery features, the same safety that comes from that, the same ease of use. And suddenly we can't see your balance and we're not sitting there with a descriptor where we can pick out which transactions are yours. So it's really, really exciting upgrade because it kind of takes away one of those fundamental trade-offs that comes with, comes between safety and privacy.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And like any of these security solutions, like you say, is always trade-offs. Like, you can go and use, five cold cards, do a three of five multi-sig, and like, that's great. And it's incredibly secure as long as you know how to deal with your backups. And like, I think the risk kind of changes from going from single sig to multi-sig, where it's like, with a single sig, it's like, how well have you, it's always how well have you secured your backup, but like, what is your risk profile of that? And like, the probably the highest probability of you actually losing funds isn't going to be someone stealing it. It's going to be you messing up in the process and actually just locking yourself out. And so BitKey obviously has taken that away. And then the trade-offs there have always been like, what if, like, you're basically giving up the privacy, BitKey can see every transaction that you make on that. But then this BIP has just come out, written by, was it Jesse Posner and Jervis Tan? Is that Jervis how you say Tan. It? Yeah. So maybe it's worth explaining what this BIP is and how, can you explain how it works?
Yeah. So what this BIP, so first of all, really exciting and really proud of the team that we're working on things like this and also sharing it with the community so that it doesn't have to be just BitKey that implements this. It can be others as well. And we can get, more private collaborative custody throughout all of Bitcoin and not just with, one team that adopts it first. And so super excited about this. And basically what the BIP does is it has a pretty technical sounding name, chain code delegation. What's underneath the hood there is that, every UTXO on every unspent transaction output on the blockchain is, locked with a script, that script and essentially locked with an individual key. And to derive that key, there are a couple of inputs. One is a seed, which is often represented as a seed phrase. And another is something called the chain code. And what the bit proposes is keeping the chain code private from what's called a collaborator in the BIP. So, for example, a collaborative custody service, something you might be familiar with, from some of the services that were out there before BitKey, or BitKey, for example, holding the third key for you. And by keeping the chain code private from that third party, the BIP basically specifies how to do co-signing. So you have a collaborator because sometimes you need them to sign. Maybe you lost stuff and you need to do a recovery transaction. Or, for example, BitKey has, a mobile pay feature, a hardware-less transactions feature where, you can configure a limit and spend, underneath that limit without using the hardware. There are reasons why you might want to do either of those things, especially recovery, and lean on a collaborative custodian to do that. And the BIP basically makes it possible to share only the information necessary to sign an individual transaction when there's a need for recovery. It also specifies a way to do that completely blindly, which is actually not what we've implemented up front. But most of the BIP, what it provides for is you can send up partial information effectively about the chain code so that the collaborator can sign one recovery transaction. Underneath the hood, the BIP is full of some cryptographic equations, which I will try not to recite here. And also, I'm probably not the right person on the team to
don't worry, it would go over my head anyway.
Yeah, really interesting though. And basically, by sending up that partial information, we can still get the greatness of, recovery transactions when we need them, but not have to, have the collaborative custodian sitting there with a wallet descriptor that reveals everything.
So just for the actual users, I want to go through what this actually means for them. Because at the moment, the way BitKey works is you have your keystone, you have a key on your phone, which is encrypted, and then block hold one of the keys on your servers. So if you want to send a transaction now, you use your encrypted key on your phone and use this. Unless you lose this, or unless you can't actually use this key, and then you have to contact Block and they sign a transaction. So with this update, what this will mean is that every time that you sign a transaction with your actual hardware and with your phone, Block can't see what's going on. But if you end up having to rely on the key on Block servers, then you can see what's happening. Is that correct?
Yeah. So there are basically two paths in the BIP, and one of them requires implementing something called Schnorr signatures. We haven't done that yet. When anyone who adopts that portion of the BIP, it means that even at signing time, there's no information revealed. Short of doing that, when the collaborative custodian signs a transaction, they see the UTXOs involved in that transaction. If that's a recovery transaction, that might be all of your UTXOs. And what we do is when that happens for BitKey, we don't log anything. We don't store anything about the UTXOs that we saw. And we're working on a feature that we call server verifiability that will allow people outside of BitKey to see that that's true. We use something called AWS Nitro, or something called Nitro Enclaves on AWS, which is basically a secure computing environment that has what's called an attestation capability. It's a way for that environment to basically provide a cryptographic attestation of what code it's running that can be checked from outside of the system. And so that's not a Block thing. That's an AWS wide thing. And we're working on a feature that basically will allow people to verify that this is true. And even in the interim, I'm really excited about this because we're truly blind to balances and transactions. We don't save this stuff. And so we don't know. So just as an example, I've been really excited by, since we have been able to see, I'm aware that there's a lot of money that has been moved onto BitKey and a ton of momentum around that and folks getting a ton of value out of storing it. And then I'm simultaneously sad because, now that we have folks migrating to our newest privacy upgrade, I don't know what's on it anymore. And I think that's awesome. I think the whole team actually has just been really excited about this because it's been one of the things that for us was a pretty sharp trade-off as we designed BitKey up front and we're finally able to remove it.
Yeah. And I also just want to reiterate that this isn't a BitKey specific thing. If you use a Casa or an Unchained, you have the same problem in any of these collaborative custody models. So the thing that you guys have focused on really heavily from the very start is making this as easy as possible, making the UX as clean as possible and as user friendly. So does this remove any of that UX or is it exactly the same?
It doesn't remove anything. In fact, actually, this feature is pretty quiet relative to its power, meaning like when you go through the upgrade flow, like it's pretty simple. It's a screen explaining what's going on and doing a wallet sweep to a new set of keys. And underneath the hood, really, you're gaining something huge. And new customers who set up BitKey now, they just get it by default. And they're not going to have any different experience. They're going to have the same 5-minute setup. They're going to have the same immediate safety after that point. They're going to have the same, easy recovery context setup to protect them against losing, both their hardware device and their phone. They're going to have the same easy setup for inheritance so that they can make sure that their Bitcoin gets passed on to their loved ones. All of that's still there.
Oh, that's awesome. That was going to be my next question, because I was playing around with this over the last few days. And for me, because it was already set up, there's like a private option. And you just like click on that, move funds to a new multisig, and that's basically all you need to do. But for anyone new setting up a BitKey now, that's just the default?
That's a default.
Oh, that's awesome. That's very cool. And like when it comes to the trade-offs with something like BitKey or really any collaborative custody, is there anything else that you think is a sort of barrier that you need to improve on?
I think a couple of things. So one is, I think even though we've made big strides on privacy, there's still more to come. So for example, with every hardware device, you have to get a hold of the hardware. Mm-hmm. You have to actually get it shipped to you somehow, or you need to go get it in a retail store. And I think historically, that's been a huge vulnerability for folks. There are folks who lost their addresses in the Ledger hack many years ago that I know that have moved because of it.
I mean, I've been very quiet on this because like I was one of these people. I don't mind saying it now because all the details that were released are now not my details, apart from my name. But like it was a huge thing. And for a long time, like I actually moved house relatively quickly after that, unrelated. But I had to like change my phone number. The amount of phishing scams I was getting was insane. Like that's a real problem. And there's people like CoinKite who will wipe your data from their servers after a certain amount of time. But like, what can you do to fix that problem?
Yeah, that's one of the things. And we're actually working on a similar approach for BitKey. Another is retail store pickup can be helpful.
Yeah,
we're actually working on implementing pickup at retail stores. Don't think like big box retail stores we're selling, but more like pickup points. We think that's an important thing to roll out so that folks have more options for actually getting a hold of a device without having to put a physical address that they're, either even if it's work that they're at physically a lot. And then we also introduce the ability to purchase BitKey with Bitcoin. One of the other aspects, there's a lot of aspects to this, but one of the other aspects is that, when you pay with something that's not Bitcoin, you need to provide a billing address. And mm-hmm. very often that's pretty problematic for folks. And so really trying to go systematically through where this type of information ends up in, both our systems and potentially others. And I think, it's something I'd love to see more focus on industry wide, because I think it's a real problem.
I mean, the idea of being able to pick this up at a retail, I can see all this coming together now, Max. The idea of being able to pick this up at a retail store where you can pay with like eCash through Square Terminal is kind of the perfect solution to this.
It's a good idea.
We need to push that forward. The other thing that I really wanted to kind of hit on is like, this is a huge privacy improvement for the individual using a BitKey. But this isn't like a private Bitcoin. This doesn't give you private Bitcoin transactions. I want to make sure that that's not lost in kind of the nuance of this. Like people who are mm-hmm. using Bitcoin, like your interaction is blocked from, like Block can no longer see that, but everyone else can see it on the network, and Block can still see transactions on the network. They just don't know they're associated with you. It's probably worth like just reiterating that point.
Yeah, I think it's a really important one. On-chain privacy is a huge challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think, this is one of those situations where things like Lightning can help. I think most people don't realize that, if they pay somebody on L1, they're potentially revealing a lot to that person about their holdings. And that's something that like there isn't really a direct analog prior to Bitcoin for. And I think it's like a very Bitcoin specific thing. It's not BitKey specific. It's not really specific to any wallet vendor or anything like that, but it is a difference in Bitcoin relative to what people are used to. Like, it's basically comes down to, you know, if I pay for something, you know, if I pay for a coffee with a $20 bill, they know I had at least $20, but they don't know all the other $20 bills that I've spent and what I might, who I might have given them to, or, you know, how much it adds up to or anything like that. And I think that still flies under the radar for a lot of folks and is something that is payments and sort of Bitcoin as everyday money becomes, and as we make it more of a thing, I think we're going to be confronting more directly.
This episode is brought to you by AnchorWatch. The thing that keeps me up at night is the idea of a critical error with my Bitcoin cold storage. And this is where AnchorWatch comes in. With AnchorWatch, your Bitcoin is insured with your own A-plus rated Lloyd's of London insurance policy, and all Bitcoin is held in their time-locked multi-sig vaults. So you have the peace of mind knowing your Bitcoin is insured while not giving up custody. So whether you're worried about inheritance planning, rent tax, natural disasters, or just your own silly mistakes, you're protected by AnchorWatch. Rates for fully insured custody start as low as 0.55% and are available for individual and commercial customers located in the US. Speak to AnchorWatch for a quote and for more details about your security options and coverage. Visit anchorwatch.com today. That is anchorwatch.com. Do you wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Well, Ledger makes that possible. They're the global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, and since 2018, they've issued over $9 billion in loans with a perfect record of protecting client assets. With Ledin, you get full custody loans with no credit checks or monthly repayments, just easy access to dollars without selling a single sat. As of July 1st, Ledin is Bitcoin only, meaning they exclusively offer Bitcoin-backed loans with all collateral held by Ledin directly or their funding partners. Your Bitcoin is never lent out to generate interest. I recently took out a loan with Ledin. The whole process was super easy. The application took me less than 15 minutes, and in a few hours, I had the dollars in my account. It was really smooth. So if you need cash, but you don't want to sell Bitcoin, head over to ledin.io/WBD and you'll get 0.25% off your first loan. That's ledin.io/WBD. If you already self-custody your Bitcoin, you know the deal with hardware wallets. Complex setups, clumsy interfaces, and a seed phrase that can be lost, stolen, or forgotten. Well, BitKey fixes that. BitKey is a multi-sig hardware wallet built by the team behind Square and Cash App. It packs a cryptographic recovery system and built-in inheritance feature into an intuitive, easy-to-use wallet with no seed phrase to sweat over. It's simple, secure self-custody without the stress. And Time named BitKey one of the best inventions of 2024. Get 20% off at bitkey.world when you use the code WBD. That's bitkey.world and use the code WBD. This episode is brought to you by Bitcoin Mina. On December 8th and 9th, I'll be in Abu Dhabi for Bitcoin Mina along with 10,000 other Bitcoiners. There's an amazing lineup of over 200 speakers sharing Bitcoin insights and innovation from all over the world. And if you're looking for the ultimate VIP experience with exclusive networking plus premium food and drink, then grab the Whale Pass, and the Whale Night Party even includes surfing, so you know I'm going to be there. Tickets are on sale now. Use code WBD to get 10% off at checkout on all pass types. The website is mina.b.tc. And use code WBD for 10% off. So BitKey is obviously relatively new in the Bitcoin hardware space. What is like the future of BitKey? Are there stuff you're working on that you're sort of really excited about? Like what will this look like in a few years' time?
Yeah. So a few years' time, I probably can't go into too much detail about. I will say, you know, we have heard a ton of different requests from our customers. We have a lot of folks using BitKey, really excited about it. And I think getting a lot of value out of safe storage on BitKey, and also realizing like we've made it so simple that like there's actually quite a few feature requests that people realize like, hey, I would be awesome if BitKey also did this. And so we've gotten requests for things like, you know, some on-chain privacy tools like we were just talking about. So things like coin control. We've got requests for things like multiple accounts. So maybe being able to, you know, help folks and not just like personal multiple accounts, not just like, oh, I want to have an account that's my savings, an account that's like something I'm spending from, but also multiple accounts to help friends and family with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I think this is something that's really special about BitKey, because what we've seen, we have a lot of folks who, you know, buy BitKey for friends and family and help them take control of their Bitcoin. And then, you know, one of the follow-on requests we'll hear is like, well, I didn't have to do anything because like they did the 5-minute setup and it worked, but I'd also love to be able to like help make sure over time that they're maintaining it in a good state and this type of stuff. To maybe set it up for kids, for example. Lots of our customers, especially with like adult kids who maybe haven't, are hearing about Bitcoin from, their crazy parent or whatever, are getting started for the first time, and folks want to kind of help continue that journey for them. And then our main focus areas are security, usability, and privacy. And so we've also got a lot of stuff planned on the security and privacy fronts. We talked a little bit about this earlier in the year in one of our blog posts, but on the privacy front, we're planning some data retention and deletion changes. We're planning some pickup points, now that we've shipped the ability to purchase Bitcoin. And on the security front, we have a couple things planned around transaction verification, and we'll have more to say about that sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, and I'm maybe not the average like BitKey user, but like, things like coin control would be great. Even if that was hidden away in advanced settings and you had to turn it on, I would love to have something like that. And then on the sort of sub accounts, like I've got a young daughter who has been stacking sat since the day she was born, and like being able to have sub accounts that you could kind of put that Bitcoin away in would also be a really cool feature. I guess the challenge for you guys is always that trading off UX with features. Will the physical device remain the same?
We're always looking at how we can improve. Some of that's small stuff. Some of that is, we've definitely heard questions from customers about alternative hardwares, and have some ideas there as well.
Nice cagey answer. That means something could be coming. We will see. And then the last one on this really is one of the, I guess, criticisms put at BitKey is the fact that you have to use the BitKey app. Is there any plan to kind of open this up and allow you to use the BitKey with other software wallets?
Yeah, it's a good call. It's true. Today, the way this works is you need to use the BitKey app with the hardware if you want to get all of the great features of BitKey. There's actually nothing inherently causing that. Like, BitKey is open source. We've published all of the code on GitHub under an MIT license. People can use it for whatever they want. And that includes the firmware and the API and how to talk to the hardware. There are some things I should call out, like BitKey is an NFC device, and that's really easy to use from your modern smartphone. If you use that from a desktop computer, you need a dongle to interact over NFC. But there's nothing inherently stopping anybody who wants to interact with the BitKey hardware right now from writing code to do that in another product. It hasn't been a focus for us up to this point, largely because ease of use, the sort of lowest hanging fruit, like most highest leverage work for us, was to build something integrated that we can make sure it's that 5-minute setup. We can make sure that things work seamlessly. There's a lot we've done in the past, with hardware and software and services all tied together, and all the other parts of Block and all the team's careers before that and everything, that like we know how to do that really well. And so we put all of our energy behind that. But I think we are listening to community feedback, and we've heard requests for, potentially using BitKey hardware with other software, or using, other hardware with BitKey's, awesome recovery tools. And, it's something we're thinking about. It's not like there's something we're launching tomorrow, and I'm not saying it, but it's definitely feedback that we're paying attention to, and I think might become part of our roadmap.
With that feedback, though, is there almost a part of this which, like, Bitcoin needs to have a solution for everyone? The hardcore Bitcoiners that want to use they want to set up their own multisig and use Sparrow or Wasabi or whatever. Like, there's tools out there that they can go and do that with. Is part of this just a case that like BitKey might not be for those people? It's serving a different audience.
Certainly. I mean, I think everybody's threat model is different. Everybody's tolerance for how much time they're going to spend setting up and maintaining something is different. Everyone's technical capability is different, and the kinds of risks that they're subject to in life is different. And I think that there are great tools out there for folks who want to spend a really long time figuring out, a DIY multisig setup. Like, there's great hardware out there. There's really flexible software. I've used it. Everybody on our team has used it at various points. And I think for some customers, like, that's the right thing, and that's what they're going to use, and that's it. And there certainly is a subset of those folks that, you know, probably never will use BitKey, and that's okay. But I'd also call out that I think there are a lot of Bitcoiners who maybe in theory they want to do those things. Maybe they've tried, maybe they did at one point, but you know, that 3 of 5 multisig that they set up, like, well, one of the keys is actually lost. And now it's like a less safe state than they set it up in the first place. And, you know, or they replaced something and didn't rotate other keys, and, you know, or had a compromise of something and didn't rotate other keys. And I think there's a bunch of situations like that, that more people than we would expect will benefit, you know, or than you might expect on paper will benefit from what BitKey brings. So I do want to bring more people, even those who are maybe used to some of the most sophisticated tools out there, into the BitKey community. But also definitely not forcing anyone. And, you know, if we can enable even more people to use BitKey by, you know, allowing more interoperability, or enabling more interoperability rather, I think you'll see us do that at some point.
Yeah. I think that this is my like unpopular opinion, which is that like, you have to be really honest about what your actual threat model is here. And like, it's great having this incredibly robust setup where, you know, you're kind of removing yourself from any, you know, nation state attack type threat against yourself. But like, if that's never a realistic threat, then the big risk in any of these setups is you. And like, taking out as much of that from the equation as possible is probably a good thing for more Bitcoiners. But I also understand like wanting to use the Bitcoin tools, wanting to do things in like the cypherpunk sovereign individual type way. But I think people just need to be really honest about the actual threat vector that they're facing.
Yep.
All right. I want to move on to the proto stuff. Is there anything else on the BitKey side that you want to make sure we hit?
I'd love to hear feedback. So we have a lot of folks who've set up, so I guess it's really for everybody listening. If you've set up BitKey recently, if you've set up BitKey a long time ago but haven't been in touch with us, I'd love to know what you think. I'd love to know what you love about it. I'd love to know what you think we should add and what should be on our roadmap. And so, you know, whether that's DMing me on Twitter, or reaching out to BitKey@block.xyz, or adding the official, you know, BitKey account on Twitter and telling us, like, please speak up. You know, it's how we make this better.
One of the awesome, I mean, full disclosure, probably a little bit late, BitKey are obviously a sponsor of the show. I think it's a great product. And one of the cool things is, I don't want to exactly say who, I don't want to give away too much security information, but like, I've got older members of my family to set up BitKey on their own, just me like basically watching them see if they can do it. And it is an incredibly seamless setup where they can take control of their Bitcoin in a way that's far superior to just having Bitcoin on an exchange. And it's incredibly, incredibly user focused, which is really cool. But let's talk a bit about Proto, because this was a really cool announcement, maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. I know you did the launch. What is Proto? What are you doing?
Yeah. So with Proto, we're building tools to help Bitcoin miners of all sizes. And that's what we're building, is basically hardware and software. And the hardware we're building is everything from custom chips, so silicon that's at the core of Bitcoin miners, to hashboards that pack a bunch of silicon, to what we call Proto Rig, and that we announced in August, that is basically a bunch of hashboards, fans and power supplies that make up a Bitcoin miner, and software that goes on top of that, both to run the rig, but also to manage a fleet of Bitcoin mining machines. And we got interested in this for a large variety of reasons. Number one is that the permissionlessness of Bitcoin depends on the decentralization of the network, and there are a bunch of centralization pressures in mining. Totally. There are very, very few hardware vendors, you know, of the very short list that make up, you know, more than 90% market share, they're all in the same country. We would like to help fix that. So we'd like to add to the list and, you know, make it possible for folks to, you know, get Bitcoin mining equipment, and software from another entity. We basically started looking into this and realized like, we're in an incredible position to help make that happen for Bitcoin and for Block. We have, you know, you talked about Jack is kind of driving the Bitcoin vision earlier. So we have a visionary CEO who believes in this, which is actually quite rare. And then we're a publicly traded U.S. publicly traded company with a healthy balance sheet that can invest in something as capital intensive as Proto. And then we have long-term system engineering expertise to be able to build something like this. And we realized, this is really important for Bitcoin, and let's go.
I love it. And what are the challenges that miners face that this is trying to, because obviously, like you say, the vast majority of ASICs right now are built in China. Having one of those built in the US, which is, I assume you're building this in the US, that's a massive benefit. But what are the sort of on-site issues that these miners have that Proto can help solve?
Yeah. So, we're not Bitcoin mining operators. We didn't start out that way. So we started off by talking to customers. That's what we do when we begin efforts at Block. And what we heard was basically that all of the hardware that folks have been using up to this point just wasn't built to be infrastructure. It was something that was more disposable, not reliable. People would, trash their fleet after, just a couple of years and go through this expensive and time-consuming process to upgrade as machines get more efficient. And we also heard things like software is a mess. So there's a software tool to do just about every individual thing in Bitcoin mining. None of them talk to each other. People have these glued together software stacks and pay high fees for them. And so we set out to make something better. And our answer came in a couple of forms. So what we announced in August is Proto Rig, which is durable, repairable, and upgradable. So it's built to be infrastructure. The hashboards are something that you can swap out. The PSUs you can swap out. The fans you can swap out. We focused both on making this possible in upgrade cycles, but also while people are maintaining their fleets to make it easy and quick to repair on the rack. Every moment spent not hashing is less Bitcoin produced for miners, and in these huge operations, those things add up really, really fast. And so we introduced Proto Rig, and we also introduced Proto Fleet, which is free and open source software for managing your entire mining fleet. And I'm excited to bring those out.
Yeah, that's very cool. Because I think quite often people think of Bitcoin miners as being these mega miners in the US where they have beautiful, huge data centers where they're clean and things are very efficient and work. I've been to see the Gridless sites in Africa. Not every mining site is like that. When I was with Eric Hersman, he was saying the biggest challenge is getting literally flies out the fans. They're just in a shack on the side of a river, essentially. And he couldn't even use Bitmain machines because they're just not durable enough. And so the idea here, I guess, is not necessarily, I could be wrong here, tell me, but is it not necessarily to hit those mega miners, it's to hit everyone else that's helping decentralized hash rate?
Yeah, it's actually both. The Proto Rig design is something that can serve folks in a lot of different sort of mining operator settings. So we see everything from, large industrial miners, meaning folks that, have large sites, many, many, many thousands of miners at a site, many sites, owned by the company or whatever. And then we also see miners that maybe have a couple of hundred rigs and they have a lot of the same problems, a lot of the same challenges. And then we see, folks with just a couple of miners that are, maybe getting started with a new operation somewhere. We see settings that are, extreme desert climates with crazy dust everywhere and high wind seasons. We see situations like what you described with Gridless, who are awesome, by the way. Leave the lights on by accident at night and suddenly, all of the miners are clogged with literal flies, and being able to swap fans out easily and, understand the state of the system remotely ends up really important in a bunch of those settings. And so we're building for miners of all sizes. There are some things for example, home miners and stuff, Proto Rig's probably not for that. I wouldn't recommend that if you're looking for a home miner, that's probably not where to get started. But, over time, we anticipate serving a really wide set of groups.
I guess the huge thing as well for the actual operation side is instead of having to have sort of an ASIC engineer on site who can take apart the fan and the chips and like and fix the machines, instead it's literally you just pull something out, push something in and press go again.
Yeah, we're really interested in on-rack repairs. So one of the things that we saw happening a lot at customer sites is, you know, the especially at larger ones, there might actually be a couple of folks who are focused on repairs and have to, you know, go around spending, you know, their entire day collecting machines, you know, throughout their racks and coming and bring them back to a repair center and taking them apart there. And, you know, we'd watch them take out 12 screws where we thought there could have been three and or zero, and do all these things that we wanted to be able to, or we wanted to make possible in 90 seconds on the rack. And that's what we're bringing with Protofleet. Or sorry,
that's awesome. And how efficient are these machines going to be? Have you released numbers on these yet?
Yeah, so there are a bunch of different ways to configure ProtoRig. One of the things that comes with upgradability is we can also configure it depending on what the customer's needs are. Some customers, they might have they have different costs of power, focus on different things. And so, you know, they may want to, for example, spend less upfront and, you know, run a machine hotter with fewer boards in ProtoRig. And you know, might be okay because they have low cost of power, you know, compromising and optimizing for hash rate output as opposed to, you know, going for the absolute lowest, you know, power efficiency they could get. And others, maybe higher cost of power, want to drive power efficiency, you know, as efficient as they can. And so what we shared at our launch event in August is that you can configure it, you know, up to really down to 14.1 joules per terahash. Which we're really excited about.
Can you put that into context for both me and the listeners? Like, what does that? How does that stack up against, you know, the Bitmains of the world?
Yeah, so Bitmain is definitely still the industry leader. So you're not going to go look at their website and our website and see us, you know, beating them on power efficiency. But the way we're thinking about this is that power efficiency is just one of the metrics that miners care about. Everybody that we've talked to, like there's a whole equation they're using to figure out like how are they going to have a profitable mining operation? How are they going to optimize? And when you look across all of those factors, we think people should, you know, be looking to ProtoRig. So those factors are, you know, infrastructure costs, so how much they're paying up front, you know, including when you start to look across upgrade cycles and you can save 15 to 20% every time you upgrade your fleet when you're using ProtoRig, and downtime. So, you know, lots of folks we noticed were tended to measure downtime as like, are the miners on or are they off? And really what matters is how much Bitcoin are they producing relative to your expectations? And there's a huge gap there. And so, you know, when you look at things like 90-second on-rack repairs from ProtoRig, that hash rate the hashing hours basically goes way up. And then, you know, of course, power efficiency and the total throughput of the machine matter as well. And we actually have specs and more information about ProtoRig on proto.xyz for anyone who's interested in kind of digging deeper.
It's very cool. And so you had the launch event a few months ago. When is this actually going to kind of hit the shelves and people are going to be able to use this?
Yeah, so we're taking orders for ProtoRig. ProtoRig is in production at customer facilities now. And so what I would highly recommend is anyone who is, you know, looking to buy ProtoRig should talk to our sales team. And you can find information about that on proto.xyz as well.
I mean, I think as Bitcoiners, we're very lucky to have a company like Block in the space. The stuff you're doing is pretty incredible. I think this latest Square thing is huge and a real like game changer.
When you look back over the past, you know, 6 months and really even just the past couple of weeks, I think the velocity is incredible. So earlier this year at Bitcoin Las Vegas, we were experimenting with acceptance on Square and it was a really exciting time and we were, you know, selling BitKey and hearing a lot of good feedback from customers. And then, you know, since then we've launched things like the privacy upgrade. The past week we launched, you know, the Bitcoin map and Cash app. You know, we launched Square conversions about a month ago. Where, you know, Square merchants can convert a portion of their sales into Bitcoin. We've launched acceptance on Square, and the team just has so many good ideas and so much going on and so much coming out the door that I'm just really excited for the next, you know, not just the past 6 months, but the next six.
How much, because obviously like Square is a huge company, was a huge company before any sort of Bitcoin integration, but how much of the company is now focused on Bitcoin? Like how much of the mind share is going on Bitcoin stuff right now?
Well, I think I have to answer that in a personal way, which is 100%. So this is what I'm working on. And across the company, I don't know the exact number, but you know, the folks that are working on it, like this is, they live and breathe this.
And why has the focus been so heavily on Bitcoin? Again, is this because like Jack believes in this thing? He wants to push this as far as he can go. I know he's a big proponent of Bitcoin as being used as like actual money rather than just this like saving store of value thing. Is that where this is coming from?
I mean, we believe that Bitcoin will be the native currency of the internet. We believe that its openness and its permissionlessness is what will make that true. And so I think really the whole team is bought in on this being the best way to, you know, really change the financial system. And so I think that's where it's coming from. And our goal is to make Bitcoin everyday money. And that's, so all of the things that you see shipping, that's what we're focused on, making Bitcoin everyday money.
I love it, man. This has been great, Max. Hopefully I'll actually meet you in person at some point in the coming year, but I've really enjoyed this. You should tell everyone where to go to find out more about you, BitKey, anything that we've talked about today.
Yeah. So for BitKey, you can go to bitkey.world.
Use code WBD.
Yeah, of course. And then for Proto, you can go to proto.xyz. And then would highly encourage, you know, following some of the official accounts for BitKey, for Block, and you know, I mentioned Miles Suter earlier in the call, and so especially if you're awesome, you know, following along with Square payment acceptance and Cash App features, I definitely want to plug him as well.
And Miles, if you're listening to the show, we need to record, man. Yeah, I appreciate this, Max. It's been great. I will hopefully see you around at some point soon. And yeah, thank you for the time.
Thanks.